At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome back to Serie A Spotlight with your hosts Jake
and Matt.
You know what time it is!
I can't tell you guys enough how much you've been my internal monologue when thinking about football for the last year.
Yes! Amazing!
We get to record while drinking some wine.
Jake and I will have a very special soft spot for Salah.
Yeah, we love him.
We love him.
Stop zooming in on Allegri's face, boy. You're going to make
me
break.
How are you exposing me?
Because you're going to make me break. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Serie A Spotlight. This is episode 150 and we're your hosts Matt
and Jake.
There was international football this week, so we took it upon ourselves to engage with you guys and take some of your questions. So welcome to the question segment.
With Freddy.
Yes, for those of you watching on YouTube, you could tell we've got a new co-host, Freddy. He's a gorgeous black cat. And the high is chilling in the studio so far, slowly integrating with the other feline that's outside.
Yeah, he's been living here and he's making it smell terrible. Like the studio, he's been living in the studio because of course we have to separate him from the other one. Apparently, to get a cat, you need like a degree in feline sociology.
Literally, because
it's crazy. Getting them used to each other. First, you have to separate them. Then you exchange blankets, like to get them used to each other's smells.
Uh-huh.
Then you feed them with the door in the middle. But anyway, that's
crazy conversation for another day. We might start a new podcast on that. Don't worry. Before we get into anything, as always, guys, make sure to follow us on our socials, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook. Subscribe to us on YouTube and engage with us a little bit over there. Let's get that engagement up. And follow us and rate us 5 stars wherever you guys get your podcast, be it Spotify, Apple, or Google, wherever you guys are. Show us some love. It'll be greatly appreciated as we continue to strive to grow this podcast and grow this community.
Hell yes. Brother, who are the people who keep this show on the road? We've recently reorganized the list and it's long.
We've been forgetting some people. I believe we have like 39 patrons. Is that what we said? 39 patrons.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to all you beautiful creatures. Thank you to Tyson, Tony, Tim, Luca, Tanino, Batman, Choco Loco, Steve, Stefan, Sluge McNoodle, Greta, Sean, Sal, Robert Blair, Pieter, Nicholas Granda, Mike Tonna, Michele, Michael Lockhart, Mattia, Matteo, Matthias, Mintoff, Grima, Kyle, Kurt, Keanu, Joey D, Ed, Dequan, David Vavra, David Mastro Battista, CJ Lena, Campbell, Nicholas Bosco, Anthony Lokash, Andy, Andrew Batman, Alan, and welcome to the family, Mr. Robert Fleming.
Woo!
We love you very much. Thank you for your contributions, but especially thank you for the company you give us on a day-to-day basis, all of you chatting away in the greatest group chat in Serie A history. And of course, your contributions mean a lot as we continue to grow the podcast, work on the studio, just so Freddy over here can continue to shit all over the floor and scratch up the furniture.
Exactly. That's it. So, bro, shall we get straight into the question segment?
I think before we do that, there's just a bit of breaking news which
has taken place
while we've been away. Firstly, Malta didn't top their group.
I was at the stadium yesterday and Malta got a red card in 20 minutes because one of the centre-backs decided to punch
Neander, a player.
He punched him in the face, man. There's VAR. The referee ran to the monitor and sent him off immediately.
New addition. One of these new additions.
He's a good player. I don't get me wrong.
He's probably the best centre-back on the team. He's big. He's physical. I hope he's not that hot-headed forever, though.
Hopefully he's learned his lesson.
But big news
coming out of Genoa that Alberto Gilardino has been sacked.
Shockingly.
And Patrick Vieira has been appointed in his stead. Shocking news, bro, to be honest with
you. I mean,
you.
Shocking and not shocking. I mean, it's shocking for us because we believe a lot in Gilardino because we've got eyes and we've got a brain. So we could see that this is a decimated team, that the major thing that it has is unity and structure. And that is all, obviously, thanks to Alberto Gilardino, who's shown us that he's capable of making this team fight even when it is decimated. Of course, he has his limits with the squad, but in my opinion, what the team needs right now is, at least with this decimated squad, someone that knows how to work all of the players. Mm-hmm. What they're getting over here is they're hitting the restart button with a manager who hasn't really had seen success anywhere he's been, quite frankly. Someone that doesn't know the players, and someone that had recently fallen out with Mario Balotelli as well, at least. To me, it's just a bit of a ridiculous decision by the club. Of course, the club, they want to see the team perform better. They want to see the team get results, but it's a marathon, not a sprint. It's a league of 38 matches, and I definitely think they made the wrong call. And whichever team snaps up Gilardino now, they've upgraded.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to start off by addressing the fact that Vieira hasn't coached in Serie A, and when it comes to these survival teams, it's very important to have a manager who knows the league well.
Yeah,
Vieira does not know the league well. Granted, he's played in it, but managing it is different gravy completely. When it came to his performance with Genoa, we mentioned recently as well, we covered the entire episode, we covered all the teams basically from
his performance
top to bottom.
With Genoa, did
yes,
you say?
Yes, yes, his performance with Genoa, Gilardino as manager, yes, has been good, considering the fact that the management keeps selling the best players in Dragosin, Martinez, the goalkeeper, of course, Retegui, Goodmanson, letting all these guys go and not replacing them adequately, and yet Genoa still managed to get results against certain teams this season. If we go
drawing
into it,
to Bologna,
you know,
yeah, in great fashion.
Exactly. Drawing to Roma, beating Monza, drawing to Inter. You know, it's not all doom and gloom for Genoa. And to be honest, with the set of players they have, I thought that Gilardino had them performing quite well.
Right.
And when it came to our survival debate, we said it's probably going to go down to who has the better manager. And Gilardino is one of the better managers from that crop of teams and managers.
Absolutely.
Vieira is a noob. Mm-hmm. Essentially, in mm-hmm. this. He doesn't know anything about Genoa. He doesn't know anything about the league. So, massive risk and shocking decision. For me, personally, the only reason I can see as to why he was sacked was because maybe he was starting to protest against certain managerial decisions or maybe criticize the direction in which the club was heading, maybe. Because it doesn't make any sense. Why on earth would they have sacked him?
It doesn't make sense. And even if they did decide to sack him, then I don't think Vieira was the right profile to bring in. If we look at Vieira's history, just very, very briefly, at Crystal Palace, he spent 3 seasons and he was most recently sacked after going 12 games without a win, including 3 games in a row where his team didn't even register a single shot on target. And the whole thing about Genoa right now is that they're lacking a creative player that can link the midfield to the attack. So how many shots on target are Genoa going to have with fucking Vieira on goal? Now, then he spent a season at Strasbourg, where after a season he left with mutual, it was a mutual decision. Essentially, I don't know if this was Vieira's doing or the club's doing, where they brought in 4 20-year-olds for a combined 52 million, not bringing in any experienced players. It just seems like, as a manager, he's not ready to take this step. This step is keeping a huge fan base and a huge Serie A historical club in Serie A. I think he's really going to struggle to do it. And I find it tough that he'll create the unity that Gilardino was able to create. What he might create is a little bit of chaos.
Yes, yes. And the fans are totally against this decision. I took to social media to take a look at what the response was, what the reaction was to Gilardino getting the sack, and fans are furious. Nah. Fans are furious. They're all complaining about the management and saying that Gilardino has probably been sacrificed for you know, trying to essentially defend the club or kind of argue the direction in which the club should be heading towards. So I'm curious to see how Vieira will do. To be fair, a few positive results will win those fans over immediately. Mm. And Vieira apparently likes a possession-based approach when it comes to football. But however, when things get tough, he is known to tighten the ship and take a more defensive approach. So I'm sure we'll be seeing a little bit of a combination of, of both as the season continues.
Yeah, it's definitely weird as well, considering that Gilardino had options to move away from Genoa last season after he had a very successful first season in Serie A. After he got the team promoted and they decided to stick with him, which is something that I really liked that, that Genoa did. I mean, it's just strange. He had opportunities to join the likes of Fiorentina, for fuck's sakes. And I was the first one as well saying, I have a dream that Milan would play a 3-4-2-1 Gilardino system and bring Gilardino on board. But he mustn't keep his head down, because this is a good thing for him. He gets to move away and he probably gets to go to an even bigger club. I just hope other teams rate him the same way we do.
Let's hope that he goes to a club with kind of a steady project, right? Yes. Or a steady management, at least a level-headed management. We'll see. It's a shame that Lecce have already brought in Gianpaolo, because, for example, Lecce have a steady set of owners. And to be honest, when it comes to the decisions granted in the transfer market, they were a little bit lacking in the year that passed. But I think Lecce, for the budget they have and everything, their owners have always been present and caring and outspoken and very positive when it comes to the club.
I think he deserves a bit better. I think Giardino deserves better.
But sometimes, man, you take a step too large and it affects your career negatively.
I don't think Genoa to Lecce is a step at all, though. It's a step back,
but
in my
sometimes
opinion.
It's these places where you have to build your brand. It's these clubs where you have to build your name, you know?
I guess.
But yeah.
Speaking of Lecce, just as part of our breaking news, I guess, Nikola Krstović scored a hat-trick in the international break.
Against Turkey, was
against
it?
Against Turkey. For Montenegro, is it?
Yeah, Montenegro. Is it sign Montenegro of things to come, brother, under Gianpaolo?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe, with a quality trequartista playing behind him.
Mark Jovinski.
Yes, sir. And some other breaking news is that, so Scalvini is back in training, which we've expected him to come back relatively soon towards the end of the year. There's still quite a speedy recovery by him. Even more fucking shockingly, what the fuck do Atalanta inject their players with, man? Because Scamacca is back in training. The guy that tore his entire leg, bro. A couple of months ago.
ACL, knee, everything he did.
ACL, meniscus, and there was another fucking fancy term that I don't know, a part of his knee. Probably like a patella tendon or something like that. Absolutely crazy that he's back in training. It obviously doesn't mean that we'll see him back soon, but definitely sooner than we anticipated.
Absolutely, sooner than we anticipated. Hopefully they're cautious with it, right?
Because these hopefully are serious injuries. It's not a fucking, oh, look what a big set of balls I've got, and he goes in and tears it again or some shit.
Yeah, he's probably panicking, you know, seeing Retegui on the form he's on.
Oh, man, and those two up front together, and how good is this for the Azzurri as well,
that's
man?
Massive.
It is absolutely huge. So that's that for the breaking news. Shall we jump into the question segment?
Yes, we can, bro. We can start with the first one from Luca Argento, a bit of a fun one, and it's topical because we're just talking about Genoa. How many cards will Balotelli get till the end of the season? He says, the closest person to answer gets a beer on me.
So this was my answer. I inputted it before Gilardino got sacked, because now the question should be how many minutes is Balotelli going to get? I initially put 9. I think he'll get around 9 yellow cards, but considering his lack of playing time, look, he'll pick up a suspension for sure. Mm-hmm. He'll definitely get those 5 yellow cards and be suspended for the next game. He has that in him, 2 appearances, 2 cards. The refs seem to be really harsh on him. Fuck it, I'm going to stick with 9, bro. Bro, I got 9 yellow cards.
I prepared 10 here, because there are 25 matches left, match days left. He's already on 2, and granted, Vieira didn't really like Balotelli at Nice, but he's so short of options at Genoa that I think he might have to play him. They also hugged it out, you know, in a video on social media. I know that doesn't really mean much, but I think considering the fact that the media is talking about how Vieira isn't going to play Balotelli, he'll probably play him just because of that.
Yeah, probably. You know? Probably to silence to silence any kind of things that will offset the dressing room.
10 and 9, bro. We'll see who gets the closest one.
Uh-huh. And how many do you guys think he'll get? Drop us a DM and let us know. And Luca Argento will get you a beer.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great for me because anything under 9 and I win.
Yeah.
Super.
That's true, actually.
Thanks for the beer, Luca. Best player in the league, this is a question from Steve Colera, and I absolutely love this question, Steve. Best player in the league, under 21, for each position. So goalkeeper, defender, midfielder, and attacker, who are the best under 21 players over there? Let's do this. You say yours, and I say mine for goalkeeper, defender, midfielder.
Okay, so goalkeepers, when it comes to starting goalkeepers, there actually aren't any under 21, but they are close. I'll give a shout out to the few who are close. Mm-hmm. And Filip Stankovic is 22.
Uh-huh.
Zion Suzuki is 22. And Turati is 23. And from those guys, I'm particularly a big fan of Zion Suzuki. I like the way he plays. Obviously, these guys aren't perfect. Of course, they're still very, very young for goalkeepers, but they play regularly and they're very promising, all of them. When it comes to under 21 goalkeeper, I like what I saw in the preseason build up to the season from Lorenzo Torriano of Milan, 19 years old.
And he also has a... Obviously, he has that Champions League performance when Mike went down injured.
Ah, yes.
So he has one UCL appearance as a very, very young goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. I believe he's 19 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, 19.
So
and very, very calm, composed man. No plays without pressure. You know, he looks like a kid today, seeing him in goal. But I'm a big fan of what I saw.
Nice. You can go for defender, midfielder, and attacker. I literally jumped in and said my goalkeeper when I said you do yours and I do mine.
So Scalvini for me is the best under 21 defender because of his injury, of course. Comuzzo has come up of Fiorentina, 19 years old. Of course, shout out to Patrick Dorgu, who's 20, and Michael Kayode, who's 20. We haven't seen much of Michael Kayode this season, but I think this season so far it's Comuzzo who takes the cake.
Yeah.
But Scalvini, of course, when it comes to these guys, is a great talent. Some might even say generational. No,
I'll jump in again. I have Comuzzo because Scalvini's been injured, and I think Comuzzo has come in and he's a nailed starter for a flourishing Fiorentina at the tender age of 19. And genuinely, it's not due to a lack of personnel because there's Pongracic and he's keeping him out of the team. They play a 2-centre-back system and he's keeping every other centre-back out of the team. An excellent reader of the game, he's good on the ball, so he can ping a pass. And he's also tough.
He's strong,
he's
man.
Big, strong, tough, and he inserts himself.
He does.
None of that backing up. He's straight into the challenge, which is super rare to find in a 19-year-old.
It's true.
Comuzzo is... Wow, Italy have a really good problem with defenders. Where they've
we'll
got
have
the
another
likes,
question about it. It's,
yeah,
it's
they've got the likes of Calafiori, Bastoni, and all of these guys, obviously, who are a bit more established nowadays. And then they've got up-and-comers in Scalvini and Comuzzo, bro, which is an excellent problem to have.
It's true. And an OG like Acerbi to shadow, right?
Exactly.
Midfielders, I mean, for me...
Easy, no?
Nico Paz.
Absolutely.
20 years old, killing it at Como.
Undisputed.
Real Madrid made. For me, after a second, Belayan, I wrote. Keep an eye on Belayan of Hellas Verona, fantastic regista. And Mbangula, of course, at Juventus has been doing great things.
Yeah, he's
20
fun.
Years old. But when it comes to like seeing them with the ball at their feet, Nico Paz is on another level, right?
Nico Paz, out of those, he has that X factor.
Yeah.
He is the guy that can go ahead and become world class. Not to take anything away from the likes of Belayan and Mbangula. Belayan particularly, I really, really fucking enjoy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And again, I'll draw the comparison to Bennacer.
Yes.
He is literally a carbon copy of Bennacer in his younger years. But Nico Paz, undisputed, best under 21 midfielder. He's creative, he's technical, and he's accurate. Absolutely. Those are the three fucking words to describe Nico Paz.
Absolutely.
And handsome. Ooh.
All right, Matty Fennec, 3 hours. When it comes to the forwards.
Serial spotlight.
When it comes to the forwards, I have two. And I'm sure
there
you have
so
two as well.
Many. There are so many.
I've got Yildiz, 20 years old, of course, incredible player. And Kastrat, Bologna has been killing it, 20 years old as well.
100%. So I've placed these guys. So Funnily enough, you put Dorgo, I think, as a defender. Uh-huh. I'm out here placing him as a forward because he's so versatile, man. So there's Dorgo at 20 years old. There's Castro at 20 years old. Bonnie, who's 21. I believe I recently said he's 19. Apologies for that. It was a non-updated website, probably, that I got the information from. But again, Yildiz is definitely the most... just by simply seeing, like, sure, he plays for Juve, but he's established himself as a starter for Juve on the left wing, which isn't even his primary position. If anything happens to Cope Miners, he could even go as an attacking midfielder. And dare I say, I think he'd be even better over there. And the way he carried Turkey when Turkey didn't realize what a talented squad they have, it was all, absolutely all, Yildiz. Apart from that, Castro is aging magnificently. And I think... they're allowing him to play a little bit deeper and to join the midfield, and we're really seeing good range of passing from him and good vision from him. And this is when I've been noticing how good he is, because he's tough, he's fast, he's good at charging down the center of the pitch, which you don't see much in strikers nowadays, like barring obviously the Haalands and so on and so forth. Like, you see, that was a real quality that R9 had, where he's just capable of running down the middle. That's a quality Castro really has to his arsenal. His shot power is incredible. And good positioning. He scores a lot of fluffy goals because he's in the right place at the right time, you know?
It's true. He's very technical. He links up really well with his teammates, drops deep. And when it comes to hustling in the box as well, he doesn't lack anything when it comes to that. I mean, he's not going to win you the headers, but his movement is good enough for him to poach a few goals in a crowded area, which is always nice to see.
And of course, a shout out to Bonnie, who's doing great at Parma, one of the greatest sparks of Parma. Good finisher. Creative finisher. We've even seen him score a back heel flick. And just his number one trait is the way he links up play and how he brings the wingers and the attacking midfielders into the game. Really good, talented set of youngsters here in Yildiz, Bonnie, Castro, and Dorgo.
And say, in general, lovely. It was nice doing the research on these guys.
Hey, I love these episodes, bro.
Even me, man. They're so much fun. It's obviously what we do every week is great. Uh-huh. But these are a little bit more laid back, a bit more conversational, a bit more...
More throughout the summer, huh? More throughout the summer. 20 minutes in already. Wow, this is great
this
episode.
This is great.
What an episode.
David Vavra asks, most improved player compared to last season. Now, I'm going to throw the statistics out the window.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about what I've seen.
Uh-huh.
I've got three names over here. Reinders,
mm-hmm.
Tijani Reinders, Moise Keane,
mm-hmm.
and Manuel Locatelli.
I have them all.
You have them all?
As in, I have a list.
Okay.
I have as my number one, Moise Keane.
Okay.
I think that considering he scored no goals, I always throw statistics out of the window, but this is a huge one, bro. He didn't score a single goal for Juve last season, and he scored a hat-trick for Fiorentina. And not only that, but... like even the match against Milan where he was upset that he missed a penalty, so on and so forth. He was a beast.
It's true.
A beast.
It's true. He was a monster.
Honestly, he's showing us his best qualities consistently. There's also Reinders and Locatelli. Of course, you can't discount Pulisic because he is now doing it against the big teams, which is a huge improvement.
Yes, very true.
Retegui, of course... Could be made redundant because of the injuries and because now he's surrounded with talent, sure. Yildiz, because he's more of a nailed-on starter nowadays. Mm-hmm. Hien, Cataldi, and Castro to a certain degree.
Cataldi, fair enough. Hien, I would argue that he had promising performances with Verona the season prior. Last season with Atalanta, he was a little bit mess, so you are right. Mm-hmm. He has improved from season to season. But he's recently, I think, matched that Verona level.
Probably just because he's doing it for a bigger team that's getting results, right? Let's stick to those top three because I like that top three.
Moise Keane. I like Pulisic as well. But however, when it comes to an outstanding improvement, first of all, Reinders, man.
Today last year, I got the award in Form 4 of Outstanding Improvement.
Today last year.
Years ago when I was in Form 4, I got the memory on Facebook today how funny you used the word outstanding improvement.
Outstanding improvement.
That blows my mind.
That's hilarious
as an award, bro. My mind, bro. It's gone. I don't know how to find. I'll show you after. I'm really getting sidetracked. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay, bro. Well done.
Thank
well
you. Done. Thank you.
You improved so much that
what
year,
a
bro.
Moment. What a moment.
What an improvement. Remarkable. Reinders has essentially become kind of one of the top midfielders in the world, getting international recognition and praise.
He's hit flow state.
He's hit flow state. He no longer hogs the ball. He's really matured nicely, I think, and he's improved astronomically in one year. Moise Keane, of course, as you mentioned, the stats speak for themselves. And Manuel Locatelli, man, is playing really, really well for Motta. More
Absolutely.
Than I would have thought. Like, to the point that Douglas Luiz isn't even mentioned as a starter. It's all about Locatelli. It's all about Coop Miners. It's all about, basically, who was the third one? Remind me. The third one?
Thuram.
I'm forgetting right now. I'm blanking. Yes, Thuram. Exactly. Kefren, Thuram, Locatelli, and Coop Miners form a perfect midfield trident.
100%. And Locatelli has added a lot to his game. Of course, he's always had the work ethic, but I think how cool and calm he's become on the ball and the way he just links the team together and calms the play down when he needs to is the major quality. And we'll start to see this in him because he's, of course, becoming a more and more experienced player, which for the number six role is one of the best things you can have to your arsenal.
Yeah.
You could be the calmest figure on the ball. You could be the most physical player. You could have the longest range passing. Nothing will ever beat experience in that role. And Locatelli's starting to have that.
And he doesn't shy away from a crunching tackle either,
nope.
Which is great.
He's really well-rounded quality-wise. It's hard to keep that Brazilian 52 million sensation out of the team. And he's doing that by himself.
He is. Granted, his star didn't help him, but you'd think the amount they spend would be playing him.
Yeah.
This question is a difficult one. Andrew Batman, I'm putting us under pressure over here. He says, who are the most delusional, self-entitled fans in Serie A? Is it Inter, Milan, Juve, or Roma? Be careful, bro. Don't let them drink from your water. It is exhausting. I'm petting him.
It is. But you know what, bro? This is dopamine, bro.
Look at this. Serotonin, baby.
Look at this gent. This should be a thing, bro. I saw an interview today, it's this page, they interview celebrities, and while they're interviewing them, they just unleash a bunch of puppies for the celebrities to pet while they do an interview. It's just like Hot Ones where you spice it up in one way or another. This could be our brand. I would just bring kittens.
Yeah.
This is so fucking good. Aha, who are the most delusional and self-entitled fans? Batman, Madonna, Andrew, you have to understand that
Batman. Batman.
Our audience are fans of teams in Serie A. So what you're doing over here is really throwing us under the bus, and you're gonna make us lose followers. And I don't appreciate you doing that. But
in
it's
fact,
fun, so we'll do it anyway.
I'm gonna answer indirectly. I'm gonna say Milan have won the most Champions Leagues, Juve have won the most Scudetti, and Inter won a treble once. Okay, sorry, Grima, sorry, Greta, but that's my take. Okay.
They
have the never in Serie B trophy.
I've separated delusional from self-entitled.
Mm.
Inter, if you think you are at the level historically at that Milan and Juve are at, you can't forget it. You're not delusional. You have one more league than Milan, but because it's a round figure and you got a second star, you go nuts. You're not bigger, historically. Milan and Juve are much bigger. Self-entitled, I know a lot of cool young Juve fans, and I've got no beef with you. My beef is with the 40-plus Juve fans. The 40-plus Maltese Juve fans, I can't stand for the life of me, bro. I can't stand them. They're the worst, man. You know what I mean? You've met older Juve fans. Nanu Joe is the best. Our grandfather supports Juve. He's the best.
He's definitely over 40.
Yes, he is. Double 40. But those like 40, 50-something-year-old Juve fans.
Look, I've had good conversations with Inter fans, with Juve fans, with many. There are entitled,
depends, right?
Exactly. There are entitled annoying fans of each team.
Mm-hmm.
I've met more Inter ones than anyone else, I think. Yeah. During Juve's 9 Scudetto season run, the fans were more annoying.
Yes.
Now that they dipped a bit, they've actually become fun to talk to. That's something I noticed as well. Because when they were winning 9 in a row, you couldn't even talk to them. Because they just tell you, you're shit, who the fuck are you?
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely unbearable.
Yeah.
I do find that the older ones, just because they remember the history, they'll start telling you about Davids and they'll start telling you, shut up. Whatever.
How far could Fiorentina go this season? Is it too early to consider them title contenders? Asks Theo.
Thank you, Theo. Too early to consider them title contenders. It is too early.
However, I feel like it's fair enough to consider them top four contenders because they've only lost one game and they look really solid.
Mm-hmm. I do think we need to see them against more top six opponents. That will be very telling. But of course, they've shown us great consistency and their defense. Like, you can't sleep on their defense because they're really keeping teams at bay over there. I'm confident they can challenge for top four. That's where I see them at the moment. But it's not straightforward because there's Napoli, Juve, Inter, Atalanta and Milan. So, and Lazio. I don't even have Lazio listed there. Napoli, Juve, Inter, Atalanta, Milan and Lazio. Lazio even more so than Milan, obviously.
Yeah. And Roma under Ranieri. Because now the fans are positive and optimistic. That's so... How do the Friedkins keep getting away with this, bro? How do they keep getting away
so
with this?
Volatile.
This is the same thing.
Those Roma fans are easy. Just give them someone affiliated with the club.
The exact same thing they did when they sacked Mourinho, and the fans are eating it up.
And by the way, when it comes to the question of the most delusional self-entitled fans, there's Inter, Milan, Juve or Roma. The fact that we didn't even account for Roma, the fact that we didn't even mention Roma, says a lot.
It's very telling.
But I think Roma fans are humble in that sense, like they know it. They're kind of like Milan were in the banter era, just times 10, because it's been a while, let's be real, since they've done anything.
It has.
Apart from, obviously, the
Europa stuff.
The Europa stuff.
Yes. Out of Ricci, Rovella and Locatelli, who is your number one right now for the regista role for the international team? For the national team, rather.
David Mastro Battista.
He said, I know Richie is fit, is injured at the moment. Of course, this question is for when he's fully fit.
And this one was a head scratcher because I think that long term, Richie has the highest ceiling.
Agreed.
He's fantastic.
He is.
And I think it probably makes sense to start him now.
I was going to say now, him.
But if I were to talk about right now, who would do the best job now, today, if we have a final today, bro, Locatelli. If there's a final today, Locatelli. But as for a project and the next competition is in 2 years, I believe, building up to that, play Ricci as much as possible, Ricci now.
The way Spalletti uses a regista isn't exactly the same way Motta uses his
Very
midfielders.
Fucking true.
Locatelli isn't a pure regista to the point that he can actually control and dictate the pace of the match on his own.
I don't think he's actually needs a
Jorginho. I think the other two are more capable, Ricci and Rovella. And Rovella has been fantastic for Lazio. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to see in the international break him and Guendouzi going in actually quite hard on each other, almost like fighting for who's the leader at Lazio, you know, seeing them collide like that. For me, Ricci right now is the next big thing, right? He's got Guardiola's stamp of approval. Milan are trying to block his signing for next year. Like, good luck with that, bro. Belayan, here we go.
Our friend drop. The same way Milan blocked Zerg, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Really good.
Yes, for me, Ricci. Ricci is very exciting. And I think in a midfield three, we could technically see both of them. Imagine... It's difficult because there's Tonali and there's Barella as well, yes. But it's, again, a good problem to have. For once, the Italian national team seems to have some depth out of nowhere.
And Spalletti should start by calling up Locatelli.
Yes, now that he's actually turned his career
Step one.
Around again.
Okay, brilliant question by Joey D here. Who is the Serie B player we don't know about now that we'll be talking about this time next year?
I'm going to start off by mentioning Matteo Tramoni, who's doing a great thing for Pisa.
Agreed.
He's got five
so
goals.
Calm, mate. So he never smashes the ball. He only places it.
That's true. And I love really to see chill. That as well. He's great. He's playing for Pisa at the moment. He's got 5 goals and 2 assists in 7 games. He's 24 years old and he's French. Keep an eye on him.
He's French-Italian.
Fritalian.
He's on loan from Cagliari, which is great.
Yes.
And
perhaps they should have kept him.
Yeah. He also has a Coppa goal. So that's 6 goals and 2 assists in 10 matches. Again, just very calm on the ball. I really like what I see from him. He's 24 years old. So obviously not the youngest, but we'll see him. Mm-hmm. We'll see him somewhere. The number one that I'm just going to go straight to number one. I'm sure you have the same guy, but none other than Steven Spendi's twin brother, Christian Spendi.
Don't say anything bad, bro, or his dad will attack you. Look that up, guys. Google it. Google Spendi father.
Yeah, he's doing I want to bring on. Sorry, I'm sidetracking again. But I want to bring
this episode needs some Ritalin.
I want to bring on Spendi's dad and Scamacca's dad on the podcast.
Yeah,
and just let them like chill. Level-headed debate about football. But Christian Spendi doing dirty things at Cesena. He's the top scorer of Serie B this season. He has 8 goals in 12 Serie B matches and 2 out of 3 in the Coppa. 2 goals in 3 matches, naturally, in the Coppa. Looks like a really complete striker. To me, he looks better than his brother.
Yes, I think so. I think so as well. He's doing perverted things in Serie B. keep an eye on him, guys. Also, I want to shout out Tarik Mukharemovic, who's a 21-year-old defender at Sassuolo.
Is he a Dagestani wrestler?
It sounds like one, eh? Tarik Mukharemovic. He's a defender for Sassuolo, 21 years old, playing really well. Tarik, let's see where he's from.
Oh my God, that's a good defender for Sassuolo.
Yes.
That's insane.
It's been a while.
That's insane.
And it's been a while. I mean, I think it's the first time ever.
Yeah.
He's from, I say, before I find it, Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Come on, Bosnia and Herzegovina. Let's fucking go.
He's on loan from Juventus.
Okay, that explains a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy I want to mention, sorry, because I'm Googling something while I also... Okay, that's it. If the lineage of Spendi isn't impressive enough, how about the third and youngest Esposito brother, Francesco Pio Esposito, on loan from Inter with Spezia, just like all the Espositos, mm-hmm. out on loan from Inter. He scored 6 goals in 11 games for Spezia, second top scorer, and looking better than both his brothers, if I'm being honest. There's some really good young talent in Serie B at the moment, and these 4 guys, I'm sure we'll be seeing them in Serie A sometime soon. Some, hopefully, with the team that they get promoted with.
Mm-hmm. A little bit harsh on Sebastiano, who's done.
He's doing
well
great, Sebastiano. He's doing very well, Sebastiano. Yeah. No, he's probably not the best Esposito for now, because mm-hmm. Sebastiano's doing it for Empoli, for a really, really fucking good Empoli in Serie A. You're right.
Yeah. Which club that hasn't been in Serie A for years would you like to come back? Asks Michele. He says, no current Serie B teams.
Oh, so we need to look at Serie C. Don't mind if I diddly do.
For me, it's a club that isn't even in Serie C. It's a club that had to start from the very beginning because they were saved by one of their legendary players.
What a guy.
Chievo Verona, the great ultimate answer. Underdogs. It was said back then they were always in the shadow of Hellas Verona. The Hellas Verona fans used to mock them by saying, you'll only make it to Serie A when donkeys fly. And then they made it to Serie A, getting the nickname the Flying Donkeys. They are a legendary team, in my opinion. I used to love watching them when they were still around. Pelissier, their captain and long-lasting bandiera and legend of the club, recently essentially got the rights to get the name back of Chievo and is starting the team again from the very bottom of Italian football and working the way up to the top. So amazing. After the team was liquidated, basically.
Yeah.
Amazing. If it's not for them, from Serie C, I'll go for Catania and a Sicilian team with a passionate fan base.
In fact, I have Catania, a historic team that as recent as 2006 to 2013, they were actually in Serie A, and it's sad to see them down all the way. It's sad as well for Sicilian football, having Palermo in B and Catania in C. Now, speaking of Palermo and Catania, because I learned this while doing research, Catania actually have a really bad reputation, because in 2007 there was a Sicilian derby between Palermo and Catania where policeman Filippo Racciti was killed during football related violence caused by Catania ultras outside the Stadio Angelo Massimino. So a bit of a bit bittersweet or whatever, saying that I'd like Catania back in Serie A, but I also don't like a single incident to define an entire,
of course, yeah.
Especially I mean, when the ultras do something, there's a history of ultras doing something, and I don't like how the ultras are the direct representatives of the club. I think a lot of the times ultras are a misrepresentation of the club, and I think they're a representation of hooliganism in certain football clubs. I think there are some that carry themselves well, I think there are others that are a bit they're very hot-headed, and they're essentially criminals a lot of the time, just like this set of ultras. No context as to why I said that, is just interesting to bring up. But Catania,
to kill the vibe entirely. Yeah. Even Freddy's depressed.
Freddy's purring. But yeah, I think Catania would be, just because I like having a representative from Sardinia and I like having a representative from Sicily, I'd like to see Catania back in Serie A. If not them, give me Palermo from Serie B.
Very good. What do you think Palladino's ceiling can be? Asks Alan. Does he have what it takes to establish himself with a long tenure at a top club, or will he remain among the decents like Italiano, Montella, Prandelli, etc.?
I don't think he'll remain with the decents.
Same here.
I think from the little case study we have, he can go to the very top. He's only 40, keep in mind. He took a newly promoted Monza team to 10th place after his predecessor struggled and the team even, the manager even got sacked. And right after, Palladino was capable of doing that, giving Monza a clear identity, which is something they had struggled with. Now at Fiorentina, he's altered his system to better suit the squad, which shows that he's willing to adapt and he has tricks up his sleeve. And he also has an extremely good eye for talent, as seen by playing Comuzzo. And he also plays players to their strength. What did Fiorentina do? In the transfer market, they had some cool signings, yes. But they also signed a bunch of rejects from last season.
Players Keane, who didn't fit systems.
Keane, Cataldi, Adli, Gosens. Mm-hmm. Harsh to call Gosens a reject. Mm-hmm. Obviously struggled with injury, but you get me. And he's getting the best out of Keane, Cataldi, Adli and Gosens. And they're all flourishing because, much like Motta, he has an eye for talent and he knows how to play players to their strengths, which is genuinely the greatest quality you can have as a manager. Who's one of the greatest manager for the past decade?
Ancelotti.
What does he do? Plays fucking players to their strength.
It's true. It's true. Absolutely, bro.
He's not doing that this season because of the whole Mbappe Vini Jr. thing, which is probably the only time that we've seen it.
For me, I can envision Palladino winning a Scudetto with Juve one day.
I think so. He played for Juve, no?
He even managed their under-21 team. That's where he started off. But you're right about his eye for talent. Even the fact that he launched Daniel Maldini at Monza, really recognizing the talent and using him as a key piece in his system. Yes, Spalletti has shown how important Frattesi is and can be, says Frank. But it seems that Inter, although he gets game time, he's never going to be seen in the same light and will be the odd one out in big games. Does he have to leave to be a player we see consistently for the Azzurri? Asks Frank.
The problem is, and he has a big problem, Frattesi, because no matter where he is, there's Barella. If he's playing with the international team, there's Barella. And if he's playing with Inter, there's Barella. The problem is that Inzaghi and Spalletti have different systems. And the main question is, can he play alongside Barella? And I think in certain systems, it could be very challenging for him to be able to accommodate that. If the system relies heavily on disciplined positional play like Inzaghi's, there's similarities in being high energy, attacking, so on and so forth. It's not going to work because they're going to leave too much space behind them. Even if there is a Brozovic or a Çalhanoğlu, it will create a significant misbalance. For a team that loves to push forward and a possession-based team, it can potentially work, especially if you use Barella closer to goal and you use Fratesi as a more hustle, box-to-box kind of guy. Kind of like a harder... I like calling him this, Fratesi, a harder working Pasalic. I really fucking see that in him. So it can potentially work in a three-man midfield system because players sometimes... Sometimes my brain thinks too much in Football Manager, where I'm like, no, because this guy's a regista, this guy's a trequartista, and this guy's a mezzala. You can't play there, you can't have two registas. Like, bullshit. You could potentially just shift the guy's position and shift his responsibilities, and it'll be just as good. So, technically, yes, but to get the best out of both of them, no, I don't think so.
I think that Fratesi, to be honest, even in the national team with the Azzurri, I think he will get outdeveloped when it comes to the players around him. I think the players around him have higher ceilings than he does. However, he will continue to be a useful piece for the team, and it totally depends on the game. For example, if you're playing against a team that might sit deep and kind of deploy a low block, and you need a late runner in the box kind of to exploit the gap over there in the middle between the midfield and the defense, then Fratesi can do that quite well. You know what I mean? If you're going up against one of the heavyweights and you need more technical players or more industrious players, quite frankly, then there are better options. When it comes to Fratesi, he's a good player, but I don't think he's at Inter starter level yet. And to be honest, I'm surprised he's getting as many minutes as he is with the international team.
True. Again, I think that he fits...
With the national team. I don't know why I keep saying international team.
I mean, it is an international team, right? And Mr. Worldwide.
Mr. Worldwide. Mr. 305.
What was I going to say? It is very different systems. Spalletti and Inzaghi's. And he does fit Spalletti's more. Just to see, man, with Inzaghi's system... Because he could potentially, Fratesi could be used in place for Mkhitaryan. But to show that there's that lack of faith in starting him, they've gone ahead and signed Zielinski, and they're playing Zielinski there, rotating with Mkhitaryan, which puts Fratesi directly competing with Barella.
Yeah.
And if he's gonna... If Barella's so essential for Inter's system in the way he carries the ball and the way he links play from defense to attack, because that's what he does. He turns defense into attack. Barella is irreplaceable in that system. And if you're directly competing with someone like that, then you're losing.
Yeah.
So I think to continue to grow as a player, especially because he's young and his career is just starting. He was at Sassuolo, he was at Monza.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was in the under-21 World Cup. It feels like yesterday. I think that the move to Inter from Sassuolo was quite fucking huge.
Yeah,
it was quite huge. It probably would have better suited him to go to a 7th place, 8th place team. And it would have given him more game time, more opportunities. But he seems quite content coming on, wearing his heart on his sleeve and being a monster in the last 15 minutes of games.
The thing with Fratesi is, man, he gets those numbers up, man. You know what I mean? Like, he's got goals everywhere he's gone. He's scored,
clutch.
Man.
He's clutch.
He's clutch as shit as a player. He's got, you know, his numbers for Italy are quite mental. 25 games, 8 goals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite surprising. It's quite shocking. Last season for Inter, you know, he had 32 appearances for Inter. 6 goals. You know, it's not a joke for a midfielder in his first season at Inter. This season, he's got 11 appearances, 3 goals, you know. For Monza, he had scored the most goals in Serie B as a midfielder, I believe. Something like that, at least. Or he had one midfielder of the year, something like that. He had got some kind of accolade or something. Yes. 37 games for Monza, 8 goals that year. You know,
I just think he needs to start playing 90 minutes. Like, as you said, he has 32 games. Like, some of those games he would have played for 7 minutes, others for 15. They're definitely nowhere close to 90-minute games. Like, you look at the progression of Pessina, who's redefined his style of play from playing 90 minutes over and over and over consecutively, realized his strengths, realized he's better as like this deep lying midfielder slash box to box rather than a Trek White stand. Mm-hmm. He's captaining Monza and he's flourishing. He's been improving ever since. You can't.
Has he though? Because he's fallen off the national. To be honest, it's because of injuries.
Yeah, he did have a spell of injuries. In Serie A, I think he's an established good midfielder. Yeah. Like he's solid for that Monza team.
Fratesi, it's interesting, man. I'm just curious to see him develop, to be honest, because there are times where I watch him and I'm like, this is a very useful player. You know, he's physical. He's quite solid defensively. He's really intelligent when it comes to attacking the box.
Yes, bro.
And then there are other times where I'm like, this guy lacks a little bit. He needs a bit more. You know, like, you're not going to compare him to Barella, like you said.
No, that's it. But yeah. I think the best way to put, bro, is a hard-working Pasalic. I really like that.
Yeah, it's true.
Another question from Frank. Frank asks the best ones, bro. I just showed favoritism. he asks, how good is Tati Castellanos? Are we talking a player who can be a part of Milan, Inter, Juve squad, or is he a level below? Really like what I'm seeing of him at Lazio, this first batch of games in Serie A.
He could be playing for Milan. He could be playing for Juve this season.
You reckon?
Of course. Has Vlahovic been killing it at Juve?
No, you're right.
They've got a gap there. Mm-hmm. Milan have had to play a 15-year-old as a striker. You know what I mean? When it comes to the way Milan and Juve both play, a technically able, intelligent midfielder, like Tati Castellanos would be a godsend.
That's the point that I have.
Yes.
I think he needs to improve his consistency in front of goal. Yes. I think that's...
His numbers have increased.
His numbers are increasing. He still needs to improve in that area. I think because the majority of teams in Serie A like a technically gifted striker that can bring the wingers and attacking midfielders into play or play a two-man up-top system like Inter.
Yeah.
I think it'd be an asset to most teams.
Same here. I think lots are lucky to have.
If you look at Milan, who are good with someone like Morata, Tammy, Giroud, those are the profiles they look for. Napoli, Lukaku.
Yeah.
Exactly. Juve, Motta, sure they have Vlahovic right now, but Motta likes a Zirkzee type.
Yeah.
Tati Castellanos is that. He's that. If he goes to Atalanta, he can play a two up top system, have Retegi to his side. Or Scamacca to his side. Or Lookman to his side. He'll be great.
In 10 starts so far in Serie A this season, he's got 5 goals and 1 assist. So his numbers are improving. However, when you watch him play, he's still quite wasteful. He wastes chances every now and then. But however, you know, back in the day, watching Ciro Immobile, one of the best strikers for Lazio, also missed a few chances here and there.
Of course, man.
So
of course.
It comes with it.
No, it's clearly steady progression by Tati. Yeah. Clearly steady progression. And now is his chance because... he's playing with Boulaye-Dia behind him and they support each other really well. He has creative players around him in a system that is very creative and attacking. And he is the starting number 9 in that system. So it's a good opportunity for him. Last season he was playing fiddle with Ciro Immobile. Mm-hmm. Now that's his role.
Yeah.
And it's his opportunity.
Absolutely. Now next up from Frank as well. If we are saying that Di Lorenzo plays because he's Spalletti's son, which other two centre-backs play with him in the back three when all fit? Scalvini also close to fitness now. So we've got Bastoni.
I hate this because I really wouldn't start Di Lorenzo.
I think, exactly. And I think it depends on the opponent and what you need, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bastoni, Buongiorno, Di Lorenzo, Scalvini, Calafiori. You have to pick three of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think you take a look at the opponent you have. If you're going to be spending a lot of the time playing against a low block, once again, play defenders who are ball players.
Yeah.
You can afford to play Bastoni. Calafiori.
Di Lorenzo.
And Di Lorenzo, for example. However, if you're playing against a team that's going to attack you and cause problems and you're
Buongiorno needs to play or Acerbi needs to play.
Exactly.
I completely and wholeheartedly agree. I think that from a balanced perspective, the ideal to me is Di Lorenzo, Buongiorno, Bastoni. Mm-hmm. When it comes to a balanced backline that can give you both, I would say those. Mm-hmm. Ideally, again, it wouldn't be Di Lorenzo, but that's the case. And also, in the system, what it would really allow is we see a shift to a forward the back system in the attacking phase of play. And this would allow Bastoni to go up on the left as he does for Inter. Mm-hmm. It allowed Di Lorenzo to right back the shit out of that position, as Di Marco can also go crazy down the left. And still over there, they'll have Buongiorno as that anchor at the back. So they don't have to worry about leaving space exploited at the back. Di Lorenzo, Calafiori and Bastoni would make Italy vulnerable to counterattacks.
Yes.
For example, Italy just played France. I know Calafiori is injured, whatever, didn't play. But imagine up against France, where France was were gonna spend so much time attacking Italy that they would have played with Di Lorenzo, Bastoni, and Calafiori. It wouldn't have worked. It wouldn't have worked.
It's true. You need a man marking tackler.
Exactly.
And Buongiorno is that, right?
Uh-huh. As well as Acerbi.
Again, good problem to have. You've got good depth. Could do with a few more right-footed ones, to be honest. I don't think Di Lorenzo should be automatically included as a starter, but of course he is, as you said correctly, Frank, Spalletti's son. Hilarious way of putting it, yeah.
Frank again. Can Pellegrini, Sule and Dybala all play in a balanced Roma team? Where does Baldanzi get game time?
For me, I think before Baldanzi gets game time, he needs to start making the difference of the bench consistently.
Agreed.
So let's just start with that. I only think that Dybala and Sule can play together if Dybala plays as a false nine, and that's very difficult with Dobvik playing up front. However, I think in kind of like a 4-4-2, that kind of, you know, that narrows out, or that kind of, you have one inverted winger, that kind of plays closer
to the striker. We agree too much, bro.
Yeah, I think it could work like that. You play Dybala alongside Dobvik up front, and then maybe Sule out wide, inverted, and then you play a direct winger on the other side that will attack the byline.
Aha, mine is instead of a 4-4-2, I'm thinking 4-2-3-1. I'm thinking a 4-2-3-1, Dybala on the left, Pellegrini down the middle, Sule on the right, with Dovbik up front. Now you tell me, Pellegrini and Dybala, because is Dybala wasted on the left when he should be an inverted right, or he should be behind goal? Maybe. But because Pellegrini has also a history of playing on the left and Dybala down the middle, I feel like they can intelligently swap during games. They can communicate, and we've seen teams do that, and we've seen them do that effectively, especially with players like Dybala, where they're given a bit of freedom, and if they have good chemistry, then it's good. I think definitely Pellegrini needs to be an attacking midfielder. He had a new lease of life under De Rossi because he was playing that position and he was played to his strengths. The second you start putting him on the left, or you start playing him in a pivot, it's impossible. You don't play Pellegrini in a pivot.
However, you play all these guys together against Fiorentina, against Inter, against Milan, you're going to get cut like butter.
Mm.
That's the thing.
But not 4-2-3-1. Sorry, part of my point. Is so long, look at this. This could potentially work in a 4-2-3-1 system, so long as the double pivot offers balance and the ability to retain possession.
So we're talking about
Cristante, for example. Now, sorry, I mentioned Cristante.
All the Roma fans right now are screaming.
But I'm talking
turn
that,
it off!
That mold, someone that can retain possession.
Yes. You would need that completely. They would need to do a whole lot of physical work for these players.
Mm-hmm.
And Pellegrini needs to be on, of course. Because
a 4-4-2, I don't know if it'll work. But where's Pellegrini?
What do you mean?
You said it could work in a 4-4-2.
In a 4-4-2 without Pellegrini. I'm saying with Dybala and Sule. Sacrificing Pellegrini.
You're saying Pellegrini, Sule and Dybala.
I don't
Dybala.
Think they can all play together, man. To be honest, maybe in your system it makes sense, a 4-2-3-1 with a double pivot that's more physical, that will do a whole lot of work for them. But then again, you know, I mean, Kone is great, but Kone, Cristante, and then
a 4-2-3-1, if you get Pellegrini, if it could shift to a 4-4-2 in the defensive phase, it can really work. If Sule and Pellegrini come down to defend, which they can do, and form a 4-4-2 with Dybala and Dovbik in the press, it can work. Similarly to what Milan did against Inter, for example. It can potentially work. It's not ideal, man. I remember when Real Madrid had Isco, Kaká, Ozil, and James Rodriguez. Mm. What are you doing? Like, yeah, it, yeah. It's too many players of the same mold, ideally, no, but it can work.
Look at your opponent, look at their weaknesses, and play whoever best exploits those weaknesses. I think it's a matter of that. It's not a matter of Pellegrini, Sola, and Dybala need to play all the time together, yeah. I think. Because sometimes fans are a bit too dramatic, man. You know, you've got these tools, you've got these weapons a season, as long as you've got five substitutions you can make in a match. Adapt and to your opponent. Play who you need to play on the day.
I still think that when Salamakers is fit again, huge fucking asset for Roma.
Yeah.
Huge. Because in that left wing back or left wing role, he's going to make a huge difference.
Massive,
because
massive.
He is the guy that's going to fucking track back and kill players and carry the ball
and
forward.
He will and serve as transition.
Exactly.
From defense to attack, absolutely.
Because with Salamakers, you could play a 4-3-3, you could play a 3-5-2, you could play a 3-4-3. He's your guy over there. I think it's significantly underrated what a difference it's making. Because they got Salamakers and they used him. He looked good. And then he was off injured for a while. Yeah. It'd make a big difference.
Frank also asks, he's got two more questions, Frank. To be honest, we included them all because they're all great.
Yeah.
He says, Dorgu will inevitably leave Lecce. If he were to stay in Italy, which team would suit him most? For me, it has to be Atalanta.
I thought about Atalanta. I didn't end up going with Atalanta. Why Atalanta?
But it's simply because of who is their left wing back right now?
What's his name? Italian guy.
Zappacosta.
Madonna.
You're talking about Ruggeri.
Ruggeri,
yes, sure. But the way they play, it's high intensity, right? Mm-hmm. So it's Ruggeri, then sometimes Zappacosta has to put in a shift, and Zappacosta has been playing more than usual. I think you put Dorgu at Atalanta, he becomes a 50 million player immediately.
I thought immediately. About that.
And then, if it's not Atalanta, for me, maybe this is your answer here. Napoli.
That is my answer.
They have an opening right there.
Yeah, because I think he's an upgrade to Oliveira and Spinazzola.
Yes.
Simply.
And Mazzocchi.
And also, on the right side, because typically you like having one wing back that's a bit more pragmatic and the other one that's a bit more offensive. And I think they could do that with Napoli. In reality, Dorgu could fit into most teams because of his versatility.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My preference is having him as a left back or left wing back that bombs forward. Because, of course, we've seen him play right midfield this season. Most teams could use this, an attacking left back. We see how Tavares improved Lazio. How Di Marco, Theo and Gosens fit into their respective teams. In my opinion, idealistically, he would suit a Motta system fantastically because of his ball playing abilities. And I think he would seek having a left back like him or a left wing back like him. But as an instant upgrade for a top Serie A team, he could fit Napoli as an upgrade, like I said, on Oliveira and Spinazzola. But to be fair, any top 7 team would be happy to take Dorgu. No?
I think so. Absolutely. Do you want to read out the next question while I check something?
Yeah. Last question from Frank. Can Sampdoria still get promotion? Who do you think gets promoted from Serie B? Oh, Frank, you've asked us a tough one here, bro. should I give you a sec to read whatever it is you're going to read?
So I just want to say, they moved away from Pirlo this season, right?
Sampdoria.
They sacked him this
season. Bro, 3 games into the season.
Yes, this season.
3 games into the season, they sacked him.
Now that they have moved away from Pirlo, I believe that it might be possible because I really didn't believe in
they
Pirlo.
Came seventh last
however
season with Pirlo.
I don't think they're ready for promotion just yet. I don't really believe in them as it stands. For me, when it comes to the teams that will get promoted this season, I'll go for Sassuolo, Pisa, Cremonese.
We're very close. In what order?
I think Sassuolo will win the league.
Mm-hmm.
Pisa will get second and Cremonese will go through the playoffs.
We should kiss on this podcast. That, well, not exactly. So I said Serie B is it's incredibly tight and technically last place for Zenone can get promoted.
Yeah.
With that being said, Sampdoria have struggled against the top Serie B teams this season with their only wins coming against Tuttorol, Modena, Mantova, and to be fair, an impressive win against Cesena. But that doesn't give me much hope in the playoffs. However, anything can happen. So if they manage to get to the playoffs, they can do a lot. Considering that in knockout competitions this season, they've eliminated two Serie A teams on penalties in Como and Genoa. If I had to bet, however, I wouldn't bet that they get promoted to Serie A. I think they can, but they won't. When it comes to teams to get promoted, I think Sassuolo will top the league. Mm-hmm. I'd say, we don't agree. I think Sassuolo will top the league. I'd say Spezia will come in at second. And if I had to make a bold prediction for the playoffs, I'd say it would be between Pippo and Zaghi's Pisa, who are current leaders, and Cremonese, who have experienced the playoffs as a squad together last season. And I think that might give them the edge over Pisa. The only reason I kind of regret doing that, but I'll stick with what I said, is because much like Grosso at Sassuolo, Pippo Inzaghi has gotten Benevento promoted from Serie B to Serie A, and he's currently the Pisa manager.
Mm.
So Grosso can do it, Inzaghi can do it, but will he is the question, you know?
It's really interesting. Spezia haven't lost a game yet in Serie B. They're doing really well. When it comes to Cremonese, though, they've got a problem. Their goal difference is one. You know, they're not having a very good season, but I think they'll improve. I love this league, man. I think anything
so
can happen.
So good, bro.
Absolutely anything can happen. It's your last place has 10 points.
That's crazy.
First place has 30 points, you know? And to think about the playoff spots, they're up for grabs.
Playoff spots is up to 8 with Brescia. Yeah.
Brescia on 17 points.
They're 7 points out of the last place team.
Yeah.
Insane. Crazy.
Not
man.
To mention a few legends in this league like Coda, Tutino, Berezinski, Fabio Borini.
Of course, and bro, all the guys at Sassuolo. Sassuolo have really managed to retain their top players in Laureante, Berardi, towards Vett, and they've really managed to get some good talent in defense, young talent that you mentioned. And Grosso, please just fuck this Lyon shit, man. Just come to Serie A. You get hit. He went to the French league. He got fucked up. He was going to get Lyon relegated. And some, was it Marseille fans that stormed the Lyon bus and beat the shit out of him, bro?
Yeah.
Had blood all over his face.
It was fucking the fans hell. That attacked him. But yes.
Come to Serie A, dog.
Doing interesting things at Sassuolo, is it?
Yes, Sassuolo. This is about he'll get them promoted in first place with probably a 15-point gap.
So. Yes. Now,
Pablo,
a fun question here.
Yeah. At the moment, who's a personal favorite player for you guys? Not necessarily in terms of being the absolute best, but just a player that you really enjoy and who maybe is a bit underrated. A Saponara type of player. So I think Saponara. He's asking who our favorite fantasista.
Just a player that you like watching, I think, is what he meant, right? Like a player you turn on the TV for, you put on a game for.
I put Nicolas Viola. Yes. Out of that Saponara type, out of the... Because we love fantasisti. Yes. We love proper fantasisti.
Like this guy over here, Moscardelli.
Like that, Moscardelli.
Absolutely
to
incredible
a degree,
player.
Baggio is probably the GOAT of that mold of player. But to me, Nicolas Viola.
Diamanti back in the day.
Giaccherini as well. Giaccherini.
They were good. I love that mold of player. For me right now, though, I find myself tuning in a lot. So, for example, Goodmanson is a player like that.
Oh,
kind of like plays in the hole. Brilliant.
Goodmanson,
I love watching Goodmanson.
Goodmanson
I love watching
has him. Elastic legs.
Yes. I love watching Goodmanson. I love watching Nico Paz. Different mold completely. I love Lorenzo Lucca. I will tune in to an Udinese game whenever to watch Lucca.
You guys know
because I'm always talking about him.
I love Lobotka.
Yes.
Love Lobotka.
Belayan, of course. I've been watching a lot this season. Adli. I love what Adli's about. I love his mold of player. I love how he will always look for that crazy pass over the top. And most of the time he actually pings it and it lands. He's not totally refined and not perfect as a player, but... He's adventurous enough for me to tune in.
Uh-huh.
Yerry Mina, I love because he doesn't stop.
Yeah.
He's taunting everyone all the time. Love that. Vanya Milinkovic-Savic.
You're on fire, bro.
Love
you're
these
on
guys,
fire.
Man. You know, Bonnie has been fun dropping in and collecting the ball.
I unfortunately really like DeMarco, for example.
When he was at Hellas Verona, I used to pray that Milan would sign him.
But he was an Inter fan from birth.
Yeah.
I constantly find myself, now it's probably because I always have him on Fanta, I constantly find myself tuning in to watch Bologna because of Orsolini. Mm. He's just a player, like he's literally the definition of that kid that was just always good at football, yeah, and just loves taking on players and loves cutting inside and having a chrach.
And loves switching wings, which I
yes,
love.
Bro.
Well.
Yes, bro.
Fucking hoofs it to the other side.
I really enjoy watching Orsolini. On to the next.
I also enjoy erratic, full of problems, raw, but Pavlovic is a player that I am always entertained by watching. I mean, my heart's in my throat every time I'm watching
Pavlovic. Yeah.
Every time I'm watching, my heart's in my throat, but if he's having a decent game, like the first the first one of the season when he played, was I really enjoyed it.
I also really enjoy, this is fun, what we enjoy watching.
What we enjoy
it's
watching.
Like we're talking about our favorite porn. It's so good. I also really enjoy the technical midfielders like Barella and Reinders.
Of course.
For example, Barella and Reinders are two really good examples of exactly what I like to see in a midfielder.
Yeah.
The same mode as like Luka Modric, man. Just that kind of midfielder.
Yeah.
But anyway. Next question.
Christos.
From Christos. Why do you say that? Christos or Christos? Christos? Probably Christos.
Christos.
Do you fellas believe... Firstly, can I just say, I love it whenever anyone calls us fellas.
Fellas?
I don't know why. I love it when you guys call us fellas, so keep calling us fellas. But
I'm not a big fan, so feel free to not.
Do you fellas believe in the
Milan? For homies, you know?
Or home dogs or corn dogs. These are all good ones. Brethrens. Do you fellas believe in the Milan Moneyball project? If yes, how long until Milan starts winning silverware? Christos, by the way, or Christos, or we've established this already. My favorite movie of all time. And I hope it is your favorite movie of all time as well. Jake didn't want to watch it for 5 years.
Because Matthew likes a film. He's the most annoying person in the world. Oh my God, bro, you have to watch Moneyball, man. Oh my
but
God,
it's
the best film I've ever seen. The best, honestly.
I watched
Jonah Hill, man. Brad Pitt, man. Incredible film, man.
You watched it.
It was really good. It was great. Great. Best film of all time?
No. I didn't say it's the best film of all time.
Your favorite.
It is the movie that appeals to me the most.
I really enjoyed it.
It's fantastic.
And you can really apply it to football and the way that football teams
Maldini
are operating.
And Massara.
Literally. And the Americans.
Yes. Fucking every single time I watch it, because I going to Australia... The two times I watched it on the plane twice, but I limited options. Obviously, Moneyball is one of them. And every fucking time Hattie hits the home run, I weep like I'm watching it for the first time. Every time it's the same home run he hits every time, and every time I'm there, there's the cling, ling, 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 ling.
Yeah, of course, it's okay if boys cry, but I am a man.
Dun, 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 and I'm weeping, man. Anyway, what do we think of Milan's Moneyball project?
Do we believe? I think as it stands right now, there are arguments that kind of indicate that you should believe, and there are arguments that indicate that you should definitely not believe, right? I think it matters. Are you a man of faith? I think that's the question over here. If you're a man of faith, then believe all you want. Are you a man who is more skeptical? Then yes. Look, I've seen too many decisions that are... questionable to believe in global, international, overwhelming long-term success from this management. The way they handled the Jovic situation, the way they handled Maldini, the way that they were going to get Lopetegui as a coach. Remember that? They were going to get Lopetegui as a coach. And then there was backlash from the fans and they abandoned the project and brought in Fonseca when there were all these world beaters available. And then there were whispers of Fonseca, of course, his job being in the air. If they sacked him, I would have answered this question. No, immediately. I think that there are many problems. However, they are American. They will probably keep Milan in the green. They are used to running sports teams. They're used to building stadiums. So I think that they'll improve Milan from a revenue perspective. And then if they improve them from a revenue perspective, if they invest wisely, they could technically, it could lead to long-term success. However, I'm not sure they know how to run the market well enough, man. That's what I worry about. So I, personally, under this management, do not believe that Milan will reach the heights of a top team in the world, personally. I think they can win a league. I think they can win maybe a Champions League if the stars align and things go well, yes. But I don't think that they're going to go on a run of winning things. You know, I don't think they're going to become like a Real Madrid or like an Inter winning the league and fighting for it every season. I don't think so.
It's just everyone's working towards that. And I think for Italian teams to work towards that, then they need to create the system for any team that isn't Juve. They have to adopt some kind of similar system to find success. I believe in the Moneyball system. I don't think it brings you instant success, but it puts you in the green and it sets you up for the long run. You look at Milan, who they won a league and they're in the green, so on and so forth. Inter just won a league, but they're in debt and fucking Zhang lost the club. Mm-hmm. And they have that constant black cloud weighing over their heads. I believe in it, and it is the system that has brought Milan back. It's the system that allows Milan to have players like Leao, Theo,
Mike, back in the day when
bro, so Leao, Theo, Mike, Tonali, Tomori and Brahim were catalysts in Milan's league winning season, and it would be impossible to have signed any of them in their prime,
of course, which is their
current prime. The early purchase and investment in growth and development is something every team should adopt, especially when paired and then with experienced players like Zlatan and Giroud, which is what Milan were doing. Friedrich is going fucking crazy.
Yeah, Friedrich's
ready. You're going to knock over the camera.
Friedkin.
The system works. The system works. It's just simply the poor judgment from the owners that are associated with the system, yes, right? Yes, the Kalulu-Emerson swap has to be the worst deal in history. The inability to properly bounce back for a top-tier striker after missing out on Xerxes was very, very disappointing as well. And they ended up with Morata and Tammy Abraham. It's more the judgment calls that this management make. But Moneyball, I agree with. I'm a big fan of it. But you have to make...
Atalanta are the experts of Moneyball, right?
But you have to make certain exceptions.
Yes.
You have to make certain exceptions. If there is a player in his prime, because, hey, Moneyball...
There you go, bro. I'll go get him.
Moneyball really works. The way Moneyball works, the way that Milan did it is, they got super young talent, and they invested in that talent, and then they signed players who are the brink of their career ending, basically. Mm-hmm. So they signed Zlatan and Giroud, and they signed Theo Hernandez, Leao, and all of these young guys. Sometimes you have to take a punt and buy some players in their prime, because sometimes you have to buy a bit of success. Sometimes you have to. Sometimes you have to pull an Inter signing. You know what I mean? Where you get Carlos Augusto,
balance, yeah.
If he has a good season.
It's the difference between being Frosinone, you know, where you just have a bunch of young players who have never done it, never really survived before, like fought as regulars in a team. If you want to win the league, yes, you need the likes of Giroud, you need the likes of Morata to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, so answer a simple question, bro. Do you believe?
I believe in the Moneyball system.
But do you believe in Milan's Moneyball project?
Fuck off. I don't believe in the people running it, man.
So no.
But Maldini did Moneyball.
Yes, but
I believed in Maldini's Moneyball. I don't believe in this Moneyball.
So it's the group of the
I believe in Moneyball. I just don't believe in not having a fucking sporting director to run it.
Yes, exactly, and that is the reason I don't. I'm skeptical. I'm one of the skeptical ones. I don't have faith. Okay, moving on. Enrico Del Prato deserves a call up to the Azzurri, asks C.
See, just as the letter C is. It's like XOXO Gossip Girl.
For those who don't know, Enrico Del Prato is a 25-year-old who can play centre-back, right-back, defensive midfielder, and even goalkeeper.
I agree, as long as it's not as a goalkeeper.
He could be a jolly for the Azzurri, however, I think there are better players. I don't think it deserves a call-up just yet. Maybe it's one of those where they call up, you know, they call up everyone and their grandma.
And they can call him up in the Nations. And maybe. I think He definitely won't be considered if he's playing for a team that's battling relegation. By the way, he's having an incredible season and he's even scored 2 goals. He definitely needs an upgrade from Parma. He deserves an upgrade from Parma. And he will certainly be driven after Atalanta let him go and recently invested in another Italian right back in Bellanova. Mm. So he probably has a bit of a chip on his shoulder and wants to displace Bellanova from that team. So Godspeed in the future, but not right now.
25 years old, you've got to prove it now, baby.
Yeah.
How will Fonseca solve his consistency problem, asks Uday.
Uday, I think you're asking the wrong guy.
Yes.
I have no solutions, but work on the team's defense, including finding the ideal center-back pairing.
Exactly. I think early just play on, the center-backs consistently. Mm-hmm. Give them game time together. Gabbia, Tomori, Simple as, or whoever
and,
you want.
And early on in the season, Fonseca said something that I adored. It's, I need to find the starting 11. I need to find the starting 11. I need to exhaust that starting 11. We need to find identity and then I can plug and play.
Exactly.
But I don't really think he's practicing what he preached too much.
I think Gabbia's injury made it more complicated.
It did make it more complicated.
Because he kind of and solved even, everything on his own.
Gabbia. Even Tammy Abraham, because ideally to me, it's Pulisic on the right, Leao on the left, and Morata behind Tammy Abraham. Mm-hmm. I think it's that 4-4-2/4-2-3-1.
That system, yes.
That's the best. And the way Morata joins the midfield, amazing, man. Amazing. Yeah. That's the system I believe in. That is how they'll get success.
He also asks, which players should Juve sign in the January Mercato? For me?
Center back and striker.
Yes. Ismaili Xerxes.
Oof. I have Ismaili. So we agree over there. And I have Luca/Castro/Boni.
But in January.
What, you think they can't get? Forget Castro. They can't get Castro in January.
It'll be difficult to land Luca in January as well, though.
But Udinese have depth in that position and Juve have money.
That's true. They might tempt it. But I think like a Xerxes type who's actually, they want to loan him out ASAP. Mm. Is more.
But do they want to loan him out
apparently
ASAP?
The United want to
I
loan
don't
him
think
out.
They want to loan him out ASAP. Huh?
No.
Because they're quite thin in that area. And they're not going to play Rashford striker again.
I heard that it's likely from United fans that he'll go.
Really?
Yeah. Escape rope. Yes, Juventus happy to offer United striker escape rope from unbearable pressure. No longer in plans of Ruben Amorim, apparently.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But Xerxes,
these are alleged. They're whispers, basically, of course. We're never going to know. You know, the club isn't going to come out and be like, yo, Xerxes is out. You know,
no,
like,
if they could get Xerxes, it's perfect.
Because it's perfect. You're putting it's a win-win for system. Everyone, you know? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Centre-back definitely Ismaili. I think they have their guy in our episode. Mm-hmm. I think they have their guy in Kalulu to bring the ball forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they should be looking for a Danilo replacement.
Yes.
/ a Bremer replacement. Not a Calafiori mold. Yeah, you know? So absolutely. I'd do that.
Is this Napoli season or will they fumble? We've talked about this before. Personally, I think it is. They're playing fewer games than everyone else. I think it's their season.
It's their season. They don't have Champions League, even though right now teams seem to catch up to them a little bit. It's their season.
I think so too. I think it'll get too crammed now.
Yeah.
Like the double match weeks are coming in hot.
Yeah.
Need your thoughts about Roman clubs. Roma, disaster, Lazio exciting.
Exactly. Lazio, impressive, entertaining, and their goal has to be the Champions League.
Mm.
Roma, they just got Ranieri, and their goal is to create some kind of harmony in the team.
Exactly.
So that their players won't end up on suicide watch, because that's how it's... That's how it's looking at the moment.
Yeah. Lazio, it's so funny that they technically downgraded when it comes to players like Milinkovic-Savic, like Ciro Immobile, like Luis Alberto.
Mm.
However, man, you hear the players speaking nowadays and the way they talk about Europe and they say, we want to win it, we want to compete, we want to push. The things they say in interviews. I never remember Luis Alberto saying anything
they
like that.
They never had this unity. Luis Alberto was incredibly talented, but he was a snob.
Yeah, he wasn't an easy person to work with, I think. No. And when it comes to like even Milinkovic-Savic's leadership, maybe it wasn't like extraordinary. You know, these guys, I don't know, man, the way they're shouldering the responsibility of actually winning silverware is as this group of players, you know, who haven't really won much in their career at all. So yes, I'm very impressed with the way Lazio have been performing on and off the pitch, to be honest. The way they're speaking in interviews as well, very mature. Even you hear Noslin speaking, for example. Noslin, like, you know.
They're well managed, man. That's my main kind of thing. Baroni is doing an excellent job with them, and he's created something exciting. It's not easy to sign all those new players and to have such great harmony instantly, and that's what they have.
Absolutely. Will Inter win any trophies this season?
That's a tough one, huh?
You know, I say trophyless, bro. Maybe Coppa Italia, but I say trophyless.
So they're getting points this season without looking convincing, which is always a good sign.
Yes.
But they seem drained. They seem like they've got no blood in them. But they're able to win nonetheless, but they look dead. With all the competitions that Inter are taking part, and I think Napoli will win the league, so I don't think Inter will win the league, and I don't think Inter will win the Champions League. I don't think they have what it takes yet. I think they can in the future. Their main chance is Coppa, which is in the Inzaghi special, right? It's Inzaghi speciality. So they can, but can Juve win it? Can Lazio win it? Can Atalanta win it? It could very much be the case that Inter go trophyless. And my question, just to answer that question, is what happens if they do go trophyless? Because keep in mind, before Inter turned into these world beaters, Inzaghi had his job on the line.
Yeah.
When he had a trophyless season, when he only won the Coppa, his job was on the line. So what happens now if Inter go trophyless in a season and they don't look that convincing?
I wonder, is
his job on the line? I'm not insinuating that it should be, because I personally don't think it should be. They have a good thing.
There are Inter fans who are very critical of Inzaghi. Yeah?
Yeah, they don't remember what it was like before. Well, they won the league with Conte.
Yeah. Fair enough. Gij says Meret will lose his starting spot come mid-season. I don't think so. I don't think Caprile is ready to take Meret's place. Not because Meret's outstanding, but I don't think Caprile is quite ready yet. I think in the future, maybe. But as it stands now, I think Meret will see how the rest
of
the
season. Do you think it could be a very Conte thing to do to just bring in a keeper in January?
That might be the case,
Be Conte. It might be Conte.
It's true.
I think Meret isn't doing himself any favors. I just think that, like you said, Caprile isn't ready either. And I think one thing that Conte values is having a bit more of an experienced keeper. He's not just going to bring on a youngster because he'll be on a hotter run of form than Meret. But how Conte would it be just to
bring a keeper in January?
A keeper in January.
I think, yes.
And I think Napoli should, because that is the only area they lack.
It's true.
That and maybe a vice for Lukaku.
However, they do have two strikers. They would have to.
They have Simeone and Raspadori, to be fair.
Yeah. This is an interesting one from Carter. You said, mention your most disliked and most liked video and why it went wrong or well in your opinion. So of course we had our TikTok before it was taken down. I had to create this new one. We used to post a lot, right? And we had a few snippets that
got a bit of backlash. I can't believe we fucking
Everything's on Instagram still, thankfully. Yes. I think the one that got funny hate for no reason was the Cucurella snippet of you singing the Cucurella song.
Got hate, but fucking what?
One guy, yeah, it got millions of views.
5 million views.
More, I think. And, bro, it was hilarious because this guy kept commenting. You know, it really pissed off. You can't even sing.
You can't even speak Spanish. You can't sing.
Like, bro, what?
that was hilarious. That was just me. Uh-huh. Like, you were searching something to keep them entertained. I just had an ADD attack. Like,
we've got a few comments to speak in Maltese from Maltese people. And
that's a really smart thing to do, considering
it's an international podcast.
Our top five are literally... Listen to this, bro, by the way. The US, Canada, Australia, UK, and then Malta.
There we go.
Those are our top five.
So yes, so, we should speak in Maltese.
Uh-huh. The next episode's in Maltese.
Yes.
Leba.
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 Puke emojis, come on. Yes. And also, I think the one that I got a lot of backlash for is was when Milan brought in Camarda for his debut at 15. And I started the snippet from a point where I said, I have a theory.
Martin Luther.
I was like, oh, watch out, bro's got a theory. Guy said he had a theory and said the most basic thing ever. Yeah, perhaps I should have worded it differently.
My favorite video is just both of us being bang on, the editing, everything, the Mourinho one.
The Mourinho one is crazy good, bro.
Even if we got AI to do it for us, we'd have done a better job. Like, and
11.
From the beginning with the impression, and then to you coming in with that 11 at the end, bro. Oh, my fucking
that was a hilarious
god,
moment.
Man. Oh, my
one
God.
One of the OG ones, bro, of Ribery is one of my favorites.
Oh, my. That's the best one.
It's
oh, my
so
God.
Funny.
Supremely underrated,
say it for those
man.
Who've never heard it. How was it again?
Nowadays, you can't say that word. I'm going to say
you
it.
You can't say
I'm
it. Say that's it. How I was watching the news. They wouldn't stop saying it, bro. We're not even going to say it on our podcast. They say it on the BBC.
It said, Ribery had the number 7 shaved into his head. What does this signify? How many minutes of football he's fit to play? Or the amount of times he's fucked an underage prostitute. And your laugh, I had caught you off guard so much, man. Your laugh was crazy, man.
It was hilarious.
What's my least favorite video is I like all the videos because it's us, dog. You know what I mean?
Their memories.
Probably
yeah, like
the Kukureya one is not my favorite. Really? As in just because, like, I hated, bro, how, like, we put so much thought, like, the Mourinho one, the Spalletti one, where it's a full breakdown of his entire career. So much thought, so much effort into our snippets. Like,
then he posts
a
4-second
video of me saying Kukureya, like fucking hits the mainstream, like 5 million views. One of my least favorite things ever, though, was we had a snippet where we're speaking about a Cagliari fan saying what a lad he is, joining in on the banter.
Yeah, he was in a wheelchair and they rolled him in with his middle fingers up in the air.
It's a disabled supporter, a disabled Cagliari fan. You could see this guy, a Cagliari fan, flipping off Inter fans, and from behind him, rolled in a wheelchair, comes the disabled guy giving the finger, and he's going ham, like he's so angry, so passionate. And it's just a funny, it's just a funny video, you know what I mean?
We'll post that with our commentary.
12 million
views.
And got fucking taken
down.
Why? Because he's in a wheelchair.
Bro,
it's not like we fucking took the piss out of him. We called him a proper lad enjoying football.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it got taken down. We're a bunch of pussies.
So TikTok banned us and we have to go to China to get it back. Fuck that. Nowadays, Twitter, we got a label. It thinks that we have unnatural, repetitive actions. It thinks that we have kind
Twitter.
Of like spam. I got a notification.
It's just
to prove
episode,
I was a human.
Episode out now and watch the snippet.
I guess
come
it's a bit
on,
repetitive,
man.
I suppose. So I'm trying to post a bit less repetitive stuff.
Maybe we should use Twitter and comment and engage and whatever. Maybe they'll shut the frick up, man.
But you
can't
know
do
what,
anything.
They
nowadays,
can never touch
man.
Our Spotify. They can never touch our YouTube. They can never take our freedom.
Exactly. As long as we've got the long form, man, that's what I care about.
Yes. So, we've got a question from Carthy. Well, it's a hot take. He said, my hot take is Scholes, Gerrard, and Lampard. None of them are even comparable to La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, or Eredivisie, all-time midfield players. That is indeed a hot take, Carthy.
It is a hot take.
I think that Gerrard, Scholes, and Lampard were great midfielders. When it came to the English mainstream media, they got a lot more coverage than players who were perhaps better at the time. I know who I prefer because I've got a podcast on Italian football. It's
no,
simple as.
I think
give me Pirlo over these guys. All
I think it's a bit unfair as well because I think like the debate of those three, I think that there are arguments that some of them maybe should be, maybe historically they're not even the top three midfielders ever in the Premier League, because there's, for example, Kevin De Bruyne, in my opinion, shits on the majority of them, mm-hmm. because he's one of the most versatile midfielders I've ever seen in my life.
Lampard's literally... numbers were mental, though.
Lampard's numbers were
Lampard
ridiculous.
Lampard was crazy.
I think Scholes is a great register, but I think if you look at, for example, like Patrick Vieira, of course, different profile and whatever, but you could make a case for that. I think if we're talking three players that have fulfilled a humongous career in the Premier League constantly in their prime, it's hard for any league to compete with the longevity that those three midfielders have had, because they're fucking incredible.
It's true.
And there's a reason they're on everyone's lips. Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes. I think they don't touch La Liga. I think La Liga with Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets,
bro, even
Modric,
Guti,
Kroos,
bro.
Guti was the best forward passer I've ever seen.
Yeah.
No cap on God. Like
Guti was crazy, man.
And then Serie A, I personally don't think they touch it either, because there have been there's been incredible talent, even in Everdeezy. But what you get with Everdeezy is that was at the start of their career.
Yeah.
And perhaps, like, if you're going to say that one of the best midfielders in Serie A history is Zidane, so like, sure, but how long was he there for?
Yeah.
You know, Pirlo, there. You know, Kaká, there, for example. Gattuso is an option. Davids is an option. Mateus, or whatever is an option.
Yeah, there are so many, man. There are so
there
many.
Are loads, but you
Totti,
you can't
De Rossi.
Totti, De Rossi, but you can't simply discount Gerrard, Lampard's scores because of what they've done over such a long period of time in that bloody league, man.
Absolutely.
Like all respect to them.
Yes, I'm not gonna
undermine
their success, but when it comes to my preferences, I know what they are.
Yeah.
The last question from Omar Khan, probably a descendant of Genghis.
and Oliver.
And Oliver.
Genghis and Oliver are cousins. Yeah, you didn't know that?
You don't know Oliver Khan, cousin of Genghis. Pulisic is better than Leao, he says, and I'd rather have him on my team every time over Leao. He's a game changer. Now,
the debate.
I think that Pulisic is a better team player than Leao, and I think he has consistent player than Leao, and has a player with a better attitude than Leao. However, when you have to compare what they can do, Leao does certain things that Pulisic simply can't do physically. Like,
and it comes down to, there are two things that we could say over here. Pulisic, more consistent, more of a team player, smarter as well. Much smarter, much more creative, much more consistent. A season is 38 matches long, obviously with all the other competitions, of course. So you need a player like Pulisic. A player that when your other players aren't performing, he's performing no matter what industry is. Mm-hmm. Allah wears his heart on his sleeve. Professional, as always, in interviews. Can he be the best player in the world?
No.
Can Leao be the best player in the world?
Yes.
That's a whole different debate. Because, and then we're also talking freak levels that Leao can reach. Leao can reach freak levels.
Yeah.
He can reach Ronaldinho levels.
Yeah.
Like, people forget that. It's like, when's Leao going to take the step? Leao won Milan the league. It wasn't only him, of course, but he was the main
sensation. Take Leao, Milan would have never won that league.
There is a photo that's going to go up on my wall when I get my place, bro, of Leao weeping when he won the league.
With
his parents, and they stormed the pitch. That was that is Leao prime. It's not when's Leao going to hit his prime. Leao is going through his prime. Unfortunately, sometimes when you get a new manager, for example, and you play him in a different system, then we're obviously going to see repercussions. We're going to see growing pains.
Mm.
Vote for it for the Love and Malta Awards, of course.
Hell yes.
December 1st. But that's my point. I'll end up going on a tangent. But, of course,
good to have them both.
Even last season, Leao wasn't, and I'm very critical of Leao for that reason. Even last season, he wasn't excellent. But Leao can be world class. He's Milan's best player. Like, you have to say he has the highest ceiling when he's on, there's no one as good as him.
It's true.
When he's on, no one touches him.
If he gets the ball close to the halfway line, and he's one on one against anyone.
Mm.
He beats them.
Yeah. He what he did against Napoli in the Champions League, for Dirty. Example, to assist Giroud. Dirty. Oh my God, it was 4 a.m. in Australia. Everyone asleep. And I'm there, bro. Trying my best not to lose my nut.
Like,
man.
David every
going
night.
Crazy. I stood up, though. I got out of bed, like.
You know, David Nostrabatista, poor guy. He's either watching the games in the middle of the night or at the fish market, apparently, exactly. Or while working, like, on his phone.
What a legend.
Do the outro, brother. Thank you very much for listening. I'm going to put the cat in front of the camera so they can get a close look.
Is that do the outro? What do you mean by do the outro?
No, exactly.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much for listening, guys. We have been your host, Jacob Matseria. Spotlight will be back same time next week to run down match day 12, is it? Serie A or match day 13? I'm not sure. Probably 13. Excited as ever to be back. I will see you guys all next week. Much love.
If you like Serie A or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
In the football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. And the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend and you're chatting to me.